Time to go to chapter 3 now, which is about amino acids, which is appropriate because we're basically on our way to talking about polypeptides and proteins, which are, of course, are made out of amino acids. So this is really not about macromolecules, this chapter. It's about monomeric subunits out of which one of those four macromolecules is built. Amino acids can be portrayed in different ways. There's two major ways that they can be represented. One of those is a Fischer projection, which we see in slide one. A Fischer projection is nice if really what you care about is what particular atoms are involved or are included in that amino acid. A Fischer projection is a planar representation, so all these atoms are represented in the same plane, which is not reality. In the real molecule, those atoms don't exist all in the same plane, but when you write with pen or paper or even on a computer screen, you have one plane to work with. So it's just a representation. It doesn't really show you the spatial orientation of this thing. A stereochemical rendering, like we see on slide 2, is just another way of representing the same thing. This is exactly the same amino acid as shown before. But now, even though it's still on within one plane that you're writing it, we use little techniques to hint at the three-dimensionality of it. So just a solid bar is a bond that does exist in the plane of that paper or that screen. And the wedges, either the solid wedge or the dashed wedge, are not actually in the plane. They're either coming out toward you, in the case of the solid wedge, or back behind the screen or paper in the case of the dashed wedges. So that gives you a representation of where each thing connected to this central carbon actually exists in space. And then in slide 3, we're looking at ball and stick models, which also have some sort of three-dimensionality to them, even though they're rendered on a two-dimensional screen. But the real point of this third slide is to show you that of the biological amino acids, of which there are 20, 19 of those have four different things connected to that central carbon, which is the gray carbon on this ball and stick model. So each of the four corners here in all but one of the amino acids is a different thing, is a different group of atoms. And therefore, that makes amino acids what kind of molecules? Chiral, exactly. C-H-I-R-A-L. And what does that actually mean etymologically, linguistically? Handed, exactly. Chiro as a combining form means hand, like in chiromancer, for instance, is a magician that casts spells with its hands, or a chiropractor, right, works on you with his hands. So chiral compounds are ones that have four different things connected to the same atom. And they're called handed or chiral compounds because having four different things connected to that central atom means that there is a left-handed and a right-handed version of it. If you just pretend making these ball and stick models, and you've probably done this in organic or some other class, you make this ball and stick model, there's no way that you can just pick it up, turn it around in space, and make it into this one on the right. The only way that you can make that left one into the right version is actually disconnecting some bonds and rearranging them. Just like your two hands. There's no way, even if you could cut off your right hand and move it around in space, you can't make it into your left hand. They're mirror images of each other. They are chiral. So there's a left-handed and a right-handed version of any chiral compound, which we designate as L versions and D versions. What do those abbreviations stand for? Levo, which means left, and dextro, which means right. Dextrous means right-handed. ambidextrous means having two right hands, which is kind of given short shrift to the left-handed people who are sinister, another word that means left. Anyway, amino acids aren't the only chiral compounds, but amino acids are chiral because they have four different things connected. If any two of these corners is the same, then you can just pick it up, turn it around, and it'll be the other version, and it won't be chiral. So that means among the 20 biological amino acids, the only one that qualifies as non-chiral is one for which the R group, and the green R here just stands for whatever else is there, right? If that R is simply another hydrogen, like the one that's in every amino acid, like the other hydrogen that's in every amino acid, then you don't have a chiral compound. And so that's the only one that actually qualifies biologically. Remember, there's many more than 20 amino acids, but there's 20 that are biological that organisms use. In slide 4, the graph we're looking at shows you that any given amino acid in solution can exist in any of three forms. And the three forms are represented by the colored boxes: rose, azure, and seafoam. So the three forms depend on how many protons have been lost by that amino acid. Okay? In the left one, notice that the amino group is protonated. There's an extra H on the amino group, and there's an extra H on the carboxyl group, or there is the H in the carboxyl group as it's defined. All right, so that's fully protonated. In the blue, one of those protons is lost. It's the one from the carboxyl. So as pH increases, the first proton to be lost from an amino acid in solution is the proton that's part of the carboxyl group. And if you continue to increase the pH, then the additional proton on the amino group will be lost as well. And so that's the green trace, both groups deprotonated. But notice the pH scale. The mid-range of the pH scale, which is the neutral range, corresponds to the blue example. And that neutral range is physiological pH. Not all parts of your body are at that neutral range, but most of your body is just a little bit higher than 7. Okay, so right here is about where most of your body, except for your stomach, is. And therefore, at physiological pHs, amino acids in solution are in their singly deprotonated form with the COO minus and the NH3 plus. And that's called the Zwitter ionic form. The German word Zwitter means hermaphrodite. Has nothing in this case to do with sexuality, but it's both protonated and deprotonated is why it was called that by the Germans. So the Zwitter ionic form of any given amino acid is usually what you'll find in textbooks. That's why they won't list them as COOH and NH2, for instance. They'll list them as COO minus, because that's really the form that occurs in your body. All right, well, let's look at the biological amino acids, which are spread out over a few slides, but each slide groups them together in an important way. So yes, there are 20 overall amino acids, but you can think of them as occurring in groups, each member of which shares an important thing. And this big group that we're looking at in slide 5 has what in common? What is it? They are nonpolar, exactly. Now, I guess we first should review what makes an amino acid. An amino acid is an amino acid if the following are true. There has to be a central carbon that we call the alpha carbon. And of course, there are four things attached to that. Or I should say, of course, there's going to be four bonds made, right? But in an amino acid, it's four single bonds. So it's that carbon is connected by single bonds to four things. Three of those things have to be just the exact right thing in order for it to be an amino acid. One of those things is just a hydrogen atom. Another is the carboxyl group. C double bond O and then an OH on the C as well. The third thing is the amino group. And so as long as you follow those rules, whatever you want to put at that fourth spot doesn't matter. That thing is an amino acid because of those other three things attached to that central carbon. And that's why there's really no limit to the number of amino acids if you want to build them in a lab. But there are 20 that organisms have evolved to use. Notice, though, that every one of these diagrams includes a central carbon, a hydrogen connected to it, a carboxyl, and an amino group, and then something else. That something else, which we represent as the R, the residue of that total amino acid, is the only thing that makes different amino acids different. It's analogous to the situation of having different nucleotides, but they differ only because the nitrogenous base differs. The rest of the nucleotide is the same in every nucleotide, assuming you're within DNA or within RNA. But these, all of these, which is not all 20, and notice also that each one is shown with in two versions. It's shown as a Fischer projection and as a stereochemical rendering. So there's two models for each name. But anyway, you correctly identified this group as being the nonpolar ones. And why are they nonpolar? What is making up that R group? Hydrocarbons, right? It's almost entirely carbons and hydrogens. And because of the near equality of electronegativity for carbon and hydrogen, that means CH bonds are nonpolar. And therefore, the amino acid as a whole is classified as a nonpolar amino acid. Oh, what's the difference between the top group and the bottom group, even within the nonpolar or hydrophobic group that we're looking at? Right, the bottom ones feature rings; they are aromatic. The top one are, what's the other word? Aliphatic, yes. All right, let's go to slide 6, look at another batch. What do these have in common? And I'm not going to force you to memorize the structure of these things or know which ones belong to which group, because it's more important to understand why they are in the group. But what is, yes, these ones are polar, and polar means only partially charged. Polar, the polar group does not include the ones that are fully charged. So these aren't ionized. They are still neutral overall as a molecule, but they have partial charges somewhere. And what's behind the partial charges? Just what you would expect. Unequal sharing between atoms, meaning there's going to be somewhere in there featuring where there's a bond featuring two atoms that differ significantly in their electronegativity. Carbon and oxygen, nitrogen and oxygen are the big things to look for there. In 7, we have another group. What are these? These ones are fully charged, right. But actually, you can break the fully charged group, which you can consider as its own group, the charged group. You can subdivide that into the positively charged ones and the negatively charged ones. In other words, the acidic ones, the positively charged ones, and the basic ones, the negatively charged ones. We're looking at the acidic ones right here. And notice histidine is one of those. It has a ring structure as well. And in 8, we're looking at a close-up of histidine. It's this isn't true of just histidine. Several amino acids can be either protonated or deprotonated on their R group. In other words, the R group itself can either take on or lose a proton for certain amino acids. Histidine is just one example, but like I was talking about before, any given molecule is going to have a certain pKa associated with it that's going to tell you the pH at which there's a half and half distribution of acid and conjugate base form. For histidine, that pKa value is very close to the physiological pH. And therefore, at physiological pHs, you're likely to find either form. And this has enzymatic implications because this is the way a lot of enzymes work. At the active site of an enzyme, which is the business end of the enzyme, right, there will be histidine residues in that polypeptide that makes up the overall enzyme. And the catalytic action of that enzyme will be to either accept a proton from the substrate or donate one to it, because it can go back and forth in either direction fairly easily because the physiological pH is fairly close to the pKa of this actual amino acid. Does that make sense? Okay. Then the final group in slide 9 is just the rest of the charged group, which is the negatively charged subset, or the basic ones. Just a couple of those. Okay, in 10, the table we're looking at kind of explains in tabular form what I've been talking about with respect to these pKa's. You can have transformation from the acidic form to the basic form by stripping of a proton from the acid form to make it into the conjugate base form. And for any given amino acid for which that's possible, there is a corresponding pKa. But if the pKa's are very low or very high, then basically that means you're going to be locked into the either the basic form or the acidic form at physiological pH, because it's just way too far to the right or to the left of the pKa. But it want, like histidine is right near the physiological pH, so you can find that in both of its forms physiologically. Okay, now we're on 11. Another table to look at. These are the 20 biological amino acids. And by the way, that fact, the fact that there are 20 biological amino acids with very, very few exceptions to that, is just another strong bit of evidence pointing to the fact that we share a common ancestor. We all come from the original cell, which is why we have so many things in common. But this is, even though this is a total list of the 20 biological amino acids, notice that it's grouped into a non-essential subset and an essential subset. So it's okay to talk about essential or non-essential amino acids, but there's no such thing as an essential protein or a non-essential protein. It's the amino acids that are either non-essential and essential. And what do those words mean? This is actually a table that applies to humans. For any given organism, you could have a similar list of essential and non-essential amino acids. This is for humans. Now, bacteria don't have any essential amino acids. Essential means that they have to get them in their diet. That organism cannot make that kind of amino acid biochemically on their own out of other stuff. So it has to be obtained as a nutrient. And bacteria, most bacteria are able to make all 20 on their own, so there are no essential amino acids for those. But for humans, we've lost the ability along the course of evolution into humans to make 9 of these things, and therefore those have to be obtained as nutrients by eating things. Seems like there was something I was going to say about this, but it must not have been very important. So I think that's yet another chapter. Yes, it is.